This story is a little spooky. It centers around the number 13. 13 was a pretty unlucky number for the train passengers and the participants in the last Old West-style train robbery in American history. It happened in a railroad tunnel, tunnel number 13, in southern Oregon. And the train was the number 13 gold special. Now look, I was born on Friday the 13th, so you would think I would have immunity from being creeped out by stuff like this. But not so much in this case, because when I put these stories on the internet, this one just happened to fall into position number 13. If you go to my website, you'll see it right there, 1313. I swear to you, that was not done on purpose. Okay, so that's enough of that. Let me introduce myself and then I'll tell you the story. My name's Finn J.D. John, and I write a weekly newspaper column called Offbeat Oregon History. It runs in about a dozen newspapers around the state right now. What you're listening to right now is an archive story, which was first published on April 5th, 2009 in the newspapers. I'm going to read it to you now, and if you'd like some more information about this little podcast or about the newspaper column it's part of, stay tuned. One of the most dramatic events in Oregon state history took place on October 11th, 1923, in a railroad tunnel in southern Oregon. It almost sounds like a Hollywood movie script. The train was the, quote, number 13 gold special. You could not make up a better name. Heading from Seattle to San Francisco. In command was engineer Sidney Bates. It was to be his last run. He was ready to retire and start drawing a nice pension. And at the fateful hour, the train was just cresting the Siskiyou summit and testing its brakes, getting ready to go through Tunnel 13. When the train slowed down to test the brakes, three men jumped aboard. This was the Dotremont brothers, 23-year-old twins Ray and Roy, and their teenage brother Hugh. They'd been planning a train robbery for months, and they'd heard a rumor that $500,000 worth of gold was aboard, so Train 13 seemed like a good one to hit. They'd stolen some dynamite from a construction site, and of course they were armed with pistols. These, they pointed at Bates, and ordered him to stop the train. Bates stopped the train at the end of Tunnel 13. Just as he was about to pull out of the tunnel. Back in the train, the passengers were not pleased. Coal smoke was starting to leak into the cars. Up front, the brothers weren't too happy either. The mail clerk, who was actually covering someone else's shift, had barricaded himself inside the mail car so the brothers couldn't get in. So they packed their dynamite around the car and touched it off. Unfortunately for everyone, the Dotremont brothers had no idea what they were doing. The amount of dynamite they used utterly destroyed the car and killed the clerk inside instantly, spread mail all over the tunnel, and there was no gold. Meanwhile, the passengers and crew members were trying to fight their way through the smoke and fire to the south end of the tunnel where the engine and the mail car were. But the fire and the smoke were too intense. Finally, a brakeman, Coyle Johnson, managed to fight his way through and was promptly rewarded for his bravery and intrepidness by being gunned down in his tracks by the robbers. Likely realizing time was running out and there was no sign of money or gold, the brothers decided to get away while they could. They'd already killed one guy, so they were going to hang if they got caught. So, in the spirit of getting rid of the witnesses, they killed Engineer Bates and the fireman, Marvin Singh, the only witnesses who'd seen them. Then they dipped their feet in creosote to throw the bloodhounds off the scent and fled. They might have gotten away with the crime, except for Edward O. Heinrich, a detective brought in to work on the crime. Heinrich, looking over a pair of overalls left by the bandits, deduced from pitch stains on the garments that the wearer was likely a lumberjack, and from the wear patterns on the buttons that he was left-handed. But the most damning thing he found was a crumpled-up old mail receipt in one of the pockets. He was able to track this right back to the brothers. 10 days after the crime, Ray felt that enough time had passed that he might hop a freight train to Ashland to do some shopping. Once he got there, he opened a newspaper over a cup of coffee in a diner and saw his name in a headline. Of course, he raced right back to the hideout to tell the others that the beans had been spilled. The brothers left the area, assumed new identities, and started new lives. But 4 years later, the past caught up with them when Hugh, who had joined the army, was fingerprinted. All three of them drew life sentences. Hugh was paroled in 1959 and died a few months later. Roy, who had been given a lobotomy in prison, died just a few months after his parole in 1983. Ray, paroled in 1961, died in 84 and spent many years working as a part-time janitor at the University of Oregon. That's the end of today's column. If you're listening for the first time, here's a little more information about this podcast and about Offbeat Oregon History, the newspaper column it's part of. Offbeat Oregon History tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about, the ones everyone has forgotten. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. We've got all of those things. It's a weekly column, and I've been writing it since late 2008. So right now there are about 175 published episodes in the kitty. So every weekday morning I pull one of those episodes up and put it out on the daily RSS feeds. One in text and pictures for your newsreader, and one in audio only for your podcatcher or for iTunes. You can read any archive column and subscribe to either daily feed by going to the website at offbeatoregon.com. Both feeds are optimized for smartphone or iPhone use, but they work great on an iPad, tablet, netbook, computer, whatever you got. All the columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening, and do drop me a line if you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of coffee. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Have a great day.